Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. Tonight we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to do the John Madden edition, kind of talk a little bit about the legendary football coach who passed away just a few days or just, you know, yesterday. And we're speaking here on December 29th of 2021. And one of the things that people need to know is I'm Illini guy Mike Kegley, 54 years old. Raised in central Illinois. We have Kedrick Prince, who's the same age as me, who was raised a little further north than the middle of central Illinois. And we have Matt Stevens, who is much, much, much younger, at least around the approximately the 20-year part. So you're going to see a little bit of a different look at it from a generational standpoint. This will not be an Illini-focused podcast, but we do think that the general nature of John Madden will allow for a discussion and interest for a lot of folks. I'm going to take the first part here a little bit and kind of throw some of my reflections out there and then get the reactions of my partners here. But so let's talk a little bit about John Madden. As somebody who's 54, born in 1967, when you grow up in central Illinois, you don't necessarily have to be a Bears fan. And when your parents talk about Chicago being where your tax dollars go to die, you don't grow up with that. Oh, I'm automatically a Bear fan. And so I grew up a Cowboy fan because the Bears, you know, if you think about it, post Butkus and pre Peyton, were just about as bad as any team has ever been. And so most of my friends are Cowboy, Raiders, Vikings, Steelers, maybe a Dolphin fan here or there. So I grew up with Madden, you know, being broadcast on the TV probably every other week because the Raiders made the game on the AFC very often between the Raiders and the Steelers. It seemed like we were seeing one of those two teams all the time. And so John Madden and his success in Oakland was a huge part of my watching TV and football. And then he transitions, of course, in 1979, or after the 78 season, he retires. 1979, you know, he's on CBS Sports as a commentator. And all of a sudden, you know, he becomes this sensation. And now he's a part of my life as a, you know, 12-year-old. And really, he stayed there until he retired in 2000, you know, in 2008. And so, and of course, overlapping that career was Madden's video game. And here he is doing that. You know, with his Madden NFL series. So he was literally been a part of my life for as long as I can imagine. And while, you know, it's obvious his health wasn't what it used to be, he is 85 years old. I found it a very emotional moment when I heard Madden died because he's always been in my consciousness. You know, Matt, you're 20 years you're 20 years, you know, younger than Ked and I. So we'll get your thoughts and then we'll see if Ked agrees with me in terms of the feelings on Madden. But Matt, this is Matt Stevens, the Illini Guys beat writer who covers football and will also hit an awful lot of basketball subjects for us as well. Matt, what were your impressions with Madden being in your life?
So I was born in 84. So I was not privy to any of John Madden's coaching in my lifetime. So I grew up with John Madden. And by the way, folks, if you can get a job where you're the baby of the group and you're 37 years old, you should do it because it's from an ego standpoint, it's awesome. But I'm 37 and I grew up with John Madden and Pat Summerall being the best two-man booth in football history, in my opinion. And I don't know if they were the best. It's just, I grew up with knowing that at 3 o'clock local central time, the best game on Fox was going to be called by John Madden and Pat Summerall. And my memory of John Madden is really simple. It's that everybody made, I would say, consolations for John Madden because he was so good at his job. He was easily in my generation and in my time, he was easily the best color guy in professional football and in football in general. I would say the only other person in my generation in terms of football that I recognized that I wanted to watch the game because he was calling it was Keith Jackson would call a game on ABC on Saturdays, and then John Madden would call the game on Sunday, and those would be the two games I knew I had to watch that weekend. That's what football was for me and my generation, again, when you know, cable TV was out there, but you still only had a certain amount of games that you could watch locally on your station. So I remember reading early on the biography of Pat Summerall and him basically deciding that I'm going to learn, because Pat Summerall was a former player. And so Pat Summerall learned, okay, I'm going to learn how to do play-by-play because John's just the best at this. And if they're going to pair us together, somebody's got to do play-by-play and it's not going to be John because he's the best at color. So Pat Summerall on the fly learned how to do play-by-play because he wanted to stay in that two-man booth because John Madden was just the best at his job. I remember growing up in southeastern Wisconsin when I moved there in seventh grade. And it was just understood that John Madden thought God's gift to quarterback play was Brett Favre. I mean, and growing up in southeastern Wisconsin, everybody knew that if the Packers were going to be on at 3 o'clock and that was going to be the Madden Summerall game, it was going to be basically a Brett Favre love fest for 4 hours. That's what we all knew it was going to happen. I also remember, and I'm old enough to now remember, when it got to the end of his run at Fox, because I don't think he wanted to do, from my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, I don't think John Madden wanted to do another game at Fox without Pat Summerall. And so what happened was, is that he is kind of his contract ended up and he somehow ended up getting picked up by ABC ESPN so that he could do Monday Night Football. And I think everybody who thought, you know, when my generation, Monday Night Football was Al Franken Dan. And so that was what everybody thought that was cool. But once that started to taper off and, you know, Dan Dierdorf and Frank Gifford started to leave it, it kind of started, Monday Night Football became kind of the thing where it wasn't as sexy as the 3 o'clock game on Sunday on Fox or on CBS. Or on NBC, as I'm old enough to remember, to bring John Madden in to do Monday Night Football with Al Michaels, everybody kind of knew, okay, you have the best play-by-play guy who's ever done this, and you have the best color guy who's ever done this. And there was a two-year stretch where they both did it. And I thought it was the best two-man booth in the history of God's green earth. And a lot of people now call, you know, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth the best two-man booth on NBC. What people don't realize is that Chris Collinsworth is literally following John Madden in doing that. And That was, in my opinion, the best two-man booth in the history of professional football and football in general. So John Madden, for me, the video game to me kind of stopped being a thing by the time I was in college or after I left college. But the video game just kind of became an obvious thing because John Madden was just so unbelievably good at his job. And, you know, for me, he goes down as the best color guy in the history of professional football, if not football in general. And that's why the video game, I think, becomes what it is, because if it's not, because people need to understand, like, by the time I was in college and it became a big, big, you know, what do you want to call it? A series or a big, you know, title thing where the new Madden comes out and everybody's geeked about it. That brand happens because John Madden's the best at what he does. If John Madden's not on that brand, people saw that, you know, there were other, you know, football video games that didn't do as well because Madden didn't have his seal of approval of it. And it was, there were a lot of things about a John Madden broadcast that you, and it was so funny because Madden stopped being part of it. Like his voice, he wouldn't do the voice of it or anything. His name would just be on it. And so people still had to have the game. He just goes down as the best color guy in the history of football. And that's at 37. That's how I'll remember him.
So, Ked, what was your experience like with Madden? Like I said, I'm down in Central Illinois. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Quad City area. A lot of people seem to forget where the northern part of the state is, but I went to high school at Rock Island, and I live in Moline now. But I just remember growing up with him. When I was younger, all my friends, we would sit around, and it was his voice for me, you know. I liked his voice when I was younger, but obviously when he got older, it was the video games for me. I really, really liked it. You know, the video games were huge. It was a big part of it. I'm not a big video guy, and I remember playing video games. I remember getting in trouble at work one day playing Madden at work with some of my students. We had a tournament, and my principal was like, "What are you doing? I'm not paying you to play video games," but it was Madden, and everybody was doing it. So I really liked that part of it. And what's sad to me is you got guys that's been around like Al Franklin and Pat Summerall and Howard Cosell and, you know, Brad Nessler and, you know, Brent Musburger and Dick Enberg. All those guys to me were just legends in the game, you know, just sports period. And, you know, Mike, you hit around here earlier, you know, they're getting older, so their health isn't as good as it used to be. But you knew who those people were when you did a game. And it's like sometimes when I watch a Boston Celtics game, and I know we're talking football, Vern Lundquist, I just remember hearing his voice. So losing guys like that at our age just stinks because, you know, face the fact people are getting older and some of the new guys are good, but the veterans are just the best at what they did. And Madden changed the game for a lot of fans, people, the video game, like I said to you. It was a sad day to find it out yesterday, I guess. And, you know, knowing how important he was to the game of football and what he meant to people. And, you know, you look on social media and it's all over social media. And even though it happened yesterday, you know, my son is 29 years old and he asked me, and he knows nothing about Madden other than video games. And he knows how big that was.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. And you know, he changed things so much and it's hard to even go into it. But when you look at it, when he did the Miller Lite commercial, that was just amazing. When he comes popping out of the, from behind the paper and keeps on going, you know, if kids or younger people, they need to go out and go to YouTube and do John Madden Miller Lite, because that really took the jock or ex-jock advertising something to a whole new level that it had never even occurred to us that it could be at. I wish I had had a chance to meet him. I know several people got a chance to meet him when he did a Monday night game down in Champaign the year that the Bears were playing in Champaign. I would have asked him, you know, because there was one guy that he reminded me of. He brought the analysis of a coach, the passion of your average fan, and the willingness to explain the game. And that's what Al McGuire did for basketball before there was Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale was an over the top. He was a, you know, I'm going to be bigger than Madden was. And he had his moments. Don't get me wrong. But to me, Al McGuire was that guy when he was talking about aircraft carriers in the lane after he won with Marquette. And I would have loved to have asked either gentleman if they fed off of one another, because I found him to be I found Madden to have that ability to connect with the people who were really good at the game and the people who were just your average everyday fans. Did you guys see something similar to that?
I did. I loved your Al McGuire analysis, Mike, because in terms of football, John Madden was the guy you wanted on Sunday. That was his. If he was doing the game, you wanted to at least check in and watch a quarter, you know, and see what was going on.
And you knew it was a big game on top of that.
And if Dick Enberg and Al McGuire were doing a game, you knew it was a huge game and you knew you had to check in. And so the comparison works really well too, because it's two guys that ended their coaching career right after winning a title and realizing, okay, I don't have to do this anymore. I'm going to go do this television thing and not have to do the stressful coaching thing anymore. And I think that's awesome. I think as a sports fan community, like, to me, it always seemed like, so again, I wasn't privy to John Madden's coaching career because I was born in 84, but for me, I look back now at like people wanting to bring Cowler out of retirement, at, you know, when he started doing the CBS thing after he won the title with the Steelers, and they wanted to bring Gruden out of retirement when he was doing the Monday Night Booth thing. And it seemed like as a collective football community, we all kind of basically, that never happened for Madden, because we were all kind of protective of him and going, no, we don't want you to go back into coaching because you're so good at this. And it seemed like the general public would have been really, really ticked if he decided to go back into, or somebody had offered him a God's amount of money to go back into coaching, because he didn't, he was so good at his second leg of his career, which was broadcasting and being the best play-by-play or best color guy in the business. The other thing I think that gets overlooked with Madden to me is that the idea of the telestrator basically was, you know, originated with John Madden. And I mean, it looked like a Warshak test sometimes when he would be done with it, but he was the best at it. As an understanding, as you were talking about, Mike, seeing it through a coach, but giving it to you through the perspective of a fan. And I think that anybody else that's kind of tried has been kind of an amateur view of, has been an amateurish of how to use a telestrator, but Madden was never afraid of taking that pen and basically creating a Warshak test on, you know, cable broadcast television.
And of course the reason he could do that, and Ked, you might remember this as well, is that era of coach would use the clicker when they watched films to go forward and back, forward and back. We had an assistant coach who used to coach at Urbana, Warren Smith, who claimed that, you know, he was one of the guys who helped invent that. I've never, you know, checked his claim, but you know, that back and forth of, okay, you got to do this, you know, and they would go three frames, then back three frames, and then forward and back and up and down. Ked, I see you smiling. You probably, with your era, you probably ran into that with coaches as well. Did you see that type of stuff with we called it the clicker. I don't know what it was called with film. Did you run into that era too?
Yeah, it is funny because you look at the technology then versus today. And the one thing I want to give him credit for, and this kind of goes with what you're asking me, is that even if you didn't know a lot about football, the average fan could learn a lot just by listening to him. And the way he went about things, the way he explained things, and, you know, he was well-respected, you know, within the coaches, you know, community, because, and even players, because obviously he had a great career with that. But, you know, just his terminology and the other thing I like, so I think some people, you know, if you're an average fan of football or basketball or baseball or golf or anything, you know, it's nice to use that lingo to make you seem intelligent, but I don't think he did that to the average fan. Because when I was growing up, when I, you know, younger, I wasn't playing sports, but I knew a lot about basketball. I mean, excuse me, football and positions when I was 9 years old because of him, you know, because he would paint that picture so easy, and they will show things on the TV, as Matt mentioned, would have just made things easier for, you know, the average dummy like myself, who, you know, who was just trying to learn the game, you know. And I like to see more of that now, but when you look on TV now, you know, it's a little bit easier to do it than what it used to be. But I guess, you know, obviously things have changed, and, you know, I hope all the people who were in his era and all the younger people now who, you know, just know him, you know, from the guy from the video game, just hearing a guy's voice, you know, I mean, I can't say enough, like what Matt mentioned, hearing those voices, you knew the game, you knew what kind of game it was going to be, you knew it was going to be prime time. I know we're talking football, but back in the 80s, Dick Vitale never came to Champaign unless Illinois played a top 10 team or 15 team, because you knew it was the game. And that's what's going to stink by losing guys like that. You know, as those guys I mentioned earlier, you know, Dick Enberg and those guys, and I know Matt mentioned a couple of them, it stinks because now you have to try to find guys who are good. Like for me, I'm a big Bill Rafferty fan for basketball. He's my favorite. I mean, just his voice is good to me, and he's getting up there in age as well. I mean, he really is. I love his voice. And, you know, I remember, even though I'm a media guy, I was doing anything I could when he was in Champaign just to get autographs from him. And he looked at me one day and said, dude, you got a media pass. What the hell are you asking me for an autograph for? But I like him. I just think he's great at it. So, you know, losing guys like that, it stinks. It's part of life, it stinks. And Mike, I'm really glad you asked Matt and I to be a part of this, because I don't think the average fan understands, the younger people, how big he was and what he did for football.
Well, I think I go back to how he coached, and there's two times in my life that it came like really together for me. The first time was in the 84 season when I got stuck watching the NFC championship game where the Bears got shut out by the 49ers with Steve Fuller at quarterback. Don't get me started on the Bears not having a good backup. But anyway, Steve Fuller at quarterback. And I got stuck watching it at my girlfriend's house in high school. And so she was like a cross country runner, had no interest in football, but she had to watch it because her boyfriend was there. And Madden kept it entertaining and kept explaining things. And she's like, well, the Bears would have won if they'd had a better off, or they had a better quarterback and they didn't have, you know, and she went through a list of things. And it's like, you know, Madden taught her that in one game, you know, just by watching the game. And it was amazing. The other thing that I used to do is when my oldest son, who's now 25, Connor, he writes some of our previews for basketball. But when I wanted to teach him the intricacies of football when he was 5 years old, it was get a Madden game for the Xbox, put him on my lap, and then freeze the game when they're going through defensive coverages or who to pass to. And it's like, okay, you know, here's the route, and you could watch the plays unfold and explain who guarded what and who was responsible based on the defense. And that was Madden's video game. And I look at that and I'm like, you know, the man was a coach, and it came through either when he was doing his job or how they structured the game that carried his name. Matt, looked like you had something there with that.
Yeah, my high school coach, like the vocabulary that Madden would use got used by every high school coach, including mine. Like the idea of a wham block did not happen until John Madden introduced what it was. And then I think because of, you know, how big he was and the positions that he played and why he loved tackle football the way that John Madden did, I felt like, you know, he was the first color guy that really introduced why Nate Newton was a Hall of Fame, you know, an all pro and Hall of Famer. And he was the first guy that would introduce like why that interior offensive lineman was so unbelievably important, or why that center was so unbelievably important, or why that nose tackle is unbelievably important. And that was him using the telestrator, understanding, I need you guys to understand why this guy is so elite at what his job is to do. And that was part of it. I think he had a understanding of, you know, again, his vocabulary got used by high school coaches for years on end in film sessions. My high school coach did the same thing with, we didn't have a clicker. We actually had like video components and just a remote control. And my high school coach would just, he wouldn't even say anything. Like he would just rewind it and then play it and rewind it. And you wouldn't hear anything. And eventually, like when you became a senior, you'd look over and go, yeah, coach, I get it. I screwed up. Like, let's move on. Like, but his vocabulary made it entertaining to the novice fan, but also to the fan that loved the nuts and bolts of tackle football and football in general. He was able to understand why guys at certain positions who wouldn't normally be, you know, considered stars became stars in a Madden broadcast and became stars later on after the Madden broadcast in their careers. Again, like a Nate Newton, like a Mike Singletary, you know, like a Leon Lett. Those kind of guys were Madden guys. And it kind of proved to everybody that not only was Madden kind of entertaining for the novice fan, but he actually knew his football from way back being a coach and winning a title for Al Davis with the Raiders and being able to do it that way. But yeah, his vocabulary and his knowledge of the game was what made him, you know, the best at what he did. And he was able to kind of mold that into a very, very entertaining brand that kind of is still going on today.
Yeah. Cad, did you have any thoughts to add on that point?
No, just, you know, kind of just the same thing I mentioned earlier about the way he, you know, explained the game and, you know, I guess, you know, some of his terminology, you know, and I wasn't, you know, in the football when I was younger, so I don't remember him really coaching. I knew who he was, but just watching, you know, when you watch the video games, when I was talking about it at work, you know, just, you know, when you made a mistake and then he would always explain to you what those mistakes were. It's just unique. And, you know, again, I wish we could all just, you know, appreciate, you know, greatness, you know, when it's there. And I know I do. I really do. I can't say that enough. And I like, you know, now, you know, that he's not there and, he, you know, he hasn't been doing it for a while, you know, it kind of stings a little bit because it's reality as far as like, you know, like we mentioned some of the old dinosaurs that are kind of leaving the game and not doing it as much anymore, but then now we have to get used to some of the new guys. But Madden was just really, really good. And I don't want to keep repeating myself, but I think, you know, we get the picture here, how important he was and what he meant for football. And I know a lot of coaches, all high school coaches and college coaches and professional coaches all over the country can appreciate what he did as a player. And, you know, like Matt mentioned, he wasn't a small guy, but he was just dominant and he was good to listen to. I mean, I there's nothing else I can say.
Yeah. And I will tell you, going back to the coaching, since I'm the only one here who was, I was one of those little robot kids that by the time I was 4 years old, I watched whatever football was on, college or NFL. And when you look at his record, it's just amazing because, you know, his first year as a coach, he went 12-1-1. And then his next year, the next 2 years, 8-4-2. I don't know how he got so many ties, but 8-4-2 the next 2 years. And then he went 10-3-1, 9-4-1, 12-2, 11-3, 13-1 with a Super Bowl title, 11-3. And then he had his down year and then he retired at 9-7. So the worst year he had was two games over 500. He won 103 games in 10 seasons and only coached in a 16-game season one time. That, I mean, when you're low, you know, like I said, your low number of games at one was 8. That's amazing because he didn't coach, you know, that was 8 out of 14. And then you take a look at who he lost to in those playoff games, you know, lost to the Chiefs in 69, lost to the Colts in 70, 72, lost to the Steelers. 73, lost to the Dolphins. 74-5, lost to the Steelers again. 76, and here's the part about this. I'm a football geek. I can't help it. 1976, when he won the Super Bowl, he lost to what was arguably one of the three greatest defenses of all time, or he beat one of three greatest defenses of all time. The 76 Steelers went 9 games allowing less than 10 points. If you go back and look at the game by game, as good as that Raiders team was at 13-1, if the Steelers had went into the playoffs healthy, they still might not have ever got his Super Bowl, because they beat the Steelers with both Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris injured, and it still was a pretty good game. For all the people who say Terry Bradshaw can't quarterback, I'm sorry, but, you know, Terry Bradshaw could quarterback. But then, you know, in 77, he lost to the Broncos, who went to the title. I mean, it is amazing the amount of teams that he lost to and the standard of excellence that he had with that Raiders team. And he got one title, but arguably his record of a 750 win percentage, I think it's number one in overall, I think slightly ahead of some guy named Lombardi. So when we look at his head coaching, it's really hard to not put him into people tend to, oh, he was just, you know, a funny guy. You know, like my head coach in high school is a guy by the name of Frank Dutton, an ex-lineman. Okay. If you close your eyes, you might think you're talking to John Madden because their voices are very similar. And he would get just as excited talking about football as Madden did. So I always had a soft spot because I felt like I was my high school football coach on the air. But when you look at what Madden did as a coach, which people totally forget about nowadays, you could argue he was one of the top five coaches of all time, too.
I'll tell you what, as a Bears fan, I would love a record like that. I mean, I just would. I mean, when you're over 500 all the time and you're competing, that's what you want. And you're right. I mean, I guess that's something that we haven't talked a lot about, was how well he did from a coaching standpoint and what he meant to the game, too. So that's a good point, Mike.
Well, what I loved about Madden was I wasn't alive for his coaching, but if you go back and you look at the history, and Mike, you tell me I'm wrong, but like those Raider teams, even that were coached by Madden, had some of the biggest personalities on the planet
yep.
still playing on those teams. So what I loved about Madden when the time that he transitioned into being a broadcaster was he mixed being an old school football guy with loving guys who wanted to have fun. The biggest example I can give to you is, so the Terrell Owens Sharpie game, where he takes the Sharpie out of his sock and signs yep. the football and gives it to a fan. That's an Al Michaels, John Madden game. And John Madden thought that was the coolest thing that's ever been done on a football field, because it was fun. It was somebody trying to have fun. One of his favorite players during the last part of his career was Randy Moss, because Randy Moss was so good at what he did on the outside as a receiver. And Randy Moss was all about having fun, but he loved, as we know, Randy Moss loves football, but he wanted to have fun. Well, when John Madden coached and when John Madden broadcasted, he tended to be drawn to people that just wanted to have fun. It's my belief of why John Madden thought Brett Favre was one of the best quarterbacks that God ever created, because God knows Favre wasn't the best technical quarterback on the planet, even in his era, because that's why the Troy Aikman Cowboys would beat him all the time. But Favre wanted to have fun. Favre was... For lack of
a better, was just the more talented, healthier Jim McMahon.
Yeah, he had ADD, where it was like, look, I want to do this because I think it'll be fun. Like, and Madden had a preference for that. And he had a love for guys like that. And so that's what I think drew the novice fan to John Madden, is that A, they learned something during the broadcast, but B, they had fun. And I go back to the, you know, comparison you made, Mike, which was Al McGuire. Al McGuire made broadcasts fun, but you also learned something. And It might not have been about basketball, but you learned something. And so in John Madden's world, it might not have been about football, but you learned something. And the last point I'll make is just, again, the concessions that people made for John Madden, and I'm not going to say I wasn't jealous, because everybody should be jealous, because if you want to be that good at what you do, that people are going to allow you to never have to get on a plane. And again, so then the Madden Cruiser becomes part of his brand, like this whole big bus. And people don't realize this, but there's this cult, you know, there's this cult sensation of John Madden, where there's a good chance, because of the road trips that he would have to take in the Madden Cruiser, that in whatever county you lived in, there's a good chance that John Madden knew where to get a good meal, because there was a chance that he had to do that. And you know, these 14-hour Madden Cruiser rides, he was going into towns that nobody would ever care that John Madden had to go into, but he knew how to get a good meal. And so, but again, the Madden Cruiser became part of that. And you would think that, I think in today's world, if somebody did that, they would think that they're kind of out there and crazy. But with Madden, it just became this, you know, grandpa type deal where, okay, he just doesn't like to get on a plane. And I remember at the end of his career, ESPN even made another concession. Oh, well, there's no way for you to do the Pro Bowl in Hawaii, so we're just not going to have Madden do the Pro Bowl. Don't worry about it. You know, yeah. So.
Well, and he did a couple of things. One is, he's the only broadcaster who worked for all four of the networks, you know, with CBS, Fox, ABC, and NBC, which I don't think there's any broadcast, or at least any NFL broadcaster who did that. And then the other thing, there was a rumor, and I can't remember if it's when he went to ABC Sports, that that somebody, one of the other networks, tried to instead of the Madden Cruiser, was going to have like a train car for him to travel in, and that he would actually have like the Madden train. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I've read about that, and I'd have to, you know, go back and see if that's an urban legend or truth. But I got to give some guy, if that is true, somebody's like, okay, well, if a bus is good, we can get him a train, and that'll be even better. Whoever that exec is, you got to give the guy points.
I remember Outback Steakhouse used to sponsor it by the end of his career.
Yeah.
So because Green Bay is such a small community, you used to be able, like in Waukesha County, there were times where you could see the Madden Cruiser sponsored by Outback Steakhouse, like roll through Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, because he was on his way up north to Green Bay, you know? And so it was, I remember that. And again, another deal where the Madden brand becomes a money-making opportunity for John Madden, that he never had to get back into coaching because he was so good at this. And his people around him were so good at parlaying how good he was at his job into having it be a financial boom by the time that he was done. But I think, what was he, in his 70s, by the time he was done, that he could just kind of sit back and enjoy his life. And I really feel like anybody who I think Troy Aikman has said it, because Troy and Joe Buck had to basically follow Pat Summerall and John Madden. They were like, look, we're never going to be as good as those guys, but we just want to be able to be almost as good by the time we're done than John Madden was. And I think he becomes the gold standard of what you want out of a football color guy at any level.
Yeah. And he's almost Vin Scully, like in the years that he was effective, because, you know, he jumps into CBS Sports and, in 1979, paired up with Summerall in 81, works all the way through the CBS Sports era through 93. Then the upstart network, Fox Sports, you know, gets it. He goes to Fox, and I think that might have been his free agency where he was offered the train. But, you know, he ends up he basically ends up, going to ABC and retires in 2008. So, you know, you're talking a guy who was around for essentially, you know, almost 30 years there. And he was still relevant at the end. I'm not saying that he was as good, you know, at the very end, but you didn't see the slippage in him that you saw in Dick Vitale. And you also didn't see him trying to grab hard and stay in the business when other guys were willing to do that. And maybe it's because he had a, you know, the nearly $100 million or whatever it was from EA Sports, where he didn't have to. But Madden kind of, you know, did what maybe only Johnny Carson did, where he kind of went out on top as the ratings giant, maybe Jerry Seinfeld as well, but he went out on top and walked away. But you know, you don't see that very often in today's world, where somebody takes it at the very, very top and kind of says, well, I'm good. I want to go out on my terms, not somebody else's.
Yeah, I think I remember him doing the interview on SportsCenter when they hired him, when ESPN ABC got him. And he basically said, I'm only doing this because I grew up listening to, you know, Howard Cosell and Don Meredith do ABC Monday Night Football. And that was way before my generation. But he said, I don't want to leave this having not done Monday Night Football. He says, that's what I want to do. And so for the last few years of his career, he and Alan John did Monday Night Football. And I thought it was a great two-man booth. I really, really did. And this is coming from somebody who loved the three-man booth of Al, Frank, and Dan. So the last thing I'll say is that the legacy of John Madden in my household is that there is the first Thanksgiving that, again, the greatness of the John Madden Telestrator, he actually used the Telestrator to count the turkey legs of the turducken. And the only reason I remember that is my dad literally looked at me and he said, Matt, we're doing that next year. I said, we're doing what? And he goes, we're doing a turducken next year. And I said, have you run this by mom? Because, like, I don't know how she feels about this. She goes, I don't care. We're doing this. That looks delicious.
How was it?
Oh, it was great. It's not really a turducken. Like, I thought a turducken was like turkey that had duck in, like, that was like turkey and duck.
Yeah.
No, it's just a turkey with like eight legs. Like, it's just, but yeah, I mean, that was again, part of the Madden vocabulary, but like in our household, we had a turducken one year because John Madden made it look fantastic. And that's the only thing I'll remember about Thanksgiving Day is Pat and John basically handed out a turkey leg at the end of the game. And that was basically it.
Ked, you got any last thoughts on, because Matt just wrapped up his last thoughts, and then I'll give you a word, and then I'll kind of wrap it up for everybody.
I'll tell you what, I mean, I know you have to be a part of this podcast, but Matt's a young pup, but he knows an awful lot about Matt. I'm pretty impressed with that, considering the fact that, you know, you and I are 154 years old. But, I mean, no, just in all, I mean, again, I'm glad you asked us to do this, and you know, I guess the last thing that you guys talked about, him going out on top is how it should be. You know, I'll leave it at that. Him being on top and him being the king and, you know, putting himself out there like that and, you know, with his career and showing people that you can do a number of different things. And, I mean, it's just remarkable. So I guess, you know, sad day yesterday when the news, you know, came out. But, you know, he's taught us all a lot. If those people who played this game, watched him coach and listened to him call a game, I think we've all learned a lot from him.
Yeah, I will say for those people who didn't get a chance to see Howard Cosell, Don Meredith, and Frank Gifford together, that would be, to me, the best three-person booth. And then the best, you know, then you have then for my age, Summerall and Madden was, I mean, look, I'm a Cowboy fan, but the 85 Bears, those powerful Niner teams throughout the 80s, that was all part of that Madden era. And then, of course, to see the Cowboys raise up again with Troy Aikman during the Madden era was, you know, so I have so many fantastic memories of what he did. And all the stories outside of, you know, all the urban legend of Madden always seems to come back to him being a, just as good a guy when the cameras are off as they were when they were on, which, you know, not fair to judge other people, but it certainly allows you to elevate Madden to a higher level. And as I go through sports, for me, I guess there were only a couple people who really were at his level. You know, you had Howard Cosell with his coverage of Muhammad Ali that was on a level that was just, it was must-watch TV. Then you had Vin Scully and his calls of the playoffs. I was never a Dodger fan, but Vin Scully just had the voice that, you know, God came down and gave it to him. And then the last one for me was Larry Merchant when he would go out and interview Sugar Ray Leonard or Marvin Hagler or Mike Tyson after a fight. And you wanted to hear what Larry Merchant was going to ask him, because he would ask these lethal dudes really tough questions while they still were on a adrenaline high and still wearing gloves. So I would always want to see those. And John Madden calling a big football game, you know, was one of the great memories, you know, for me watching it. And I really want to, you know, anybody who's getting a chance to listen to Illini guys, Eye on the Illini for your first time, you know, we're sports geeks and we like sports other than the Illini. We don't always get time to talk about them because so much is going on with the Illini teams. But boy, it's been a lot of fun to sit down with the two of you guys and, you know, talk about some of these memories. And of course, if you do like what you've heard here, you can go and look at your podcast. You can look at the Illini Guys family of podcasts. You can find them everywhere. Eye on the Illini is where we get all of us together and we talk about usually about Illini stuff, but we go into other sports like this occasionally. You'll also get Sturdy for 30, which is our ultimate Illini insider, Brad Sturdy, where he does interviews with people who are high school athletes or various people affiliated with Illinois or talking about Illinois games, a fantastic podcast. And of course, Ked is our recruiting director, and he has Ked's Recruiting Roundup, where you get to talk to high school athletes who are being recruited or their coaches. You get a totally different view than what you get with just, you know, somebody talking about, well, this player is good at this and this player is good at that. You get that at IlliniGuys.com. And of course, when you go there, you know, Matt is our staff writer. So he's writing beat reporter for the football team, does a lot of things on the basketball side. So you're going to get, I got to be honest with you, probably the best quality writing for coverage of Illinois sports that you can get anywhere. Ked will have his recruiting spotlights for both football and basketball. You get those there. Brad Sturdy was actually embedded like a military with a military unit. He was embedded with the Illini basketball coaches for 2 days. Somehow the Illini basketball coaches are all okay. So please don't send us emails worrying about Coach Underwood. He's fine. But 2 days of Brad, he gives, you can sit there and read his four-part series on what it's like to prepare for a game as he goes through that and basically shares some of the behind the scenes stuff. You'll also get the coverage of Illini sports through the eyes of Larry Smith, who is a longtime CNN and NBA TV anchor. And of course, if you want to listen to us, we also have the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular, which is out there on the air, a two-hour radio show once a week. You can find that. You go to IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button, and you can see all across the 25 stations throughout Illinois that cover our program and what time they have it on. So if you want to subscribe to Illini Guys, it's only $99 for a year. That's a very good value for all the stuff that you get. And we actually do subscriber-only Zooms where you get all the inside scoops. One of those is tonight on December 29th. 2021, 8 o'clock tonight. That's actually going to be going on. If you subscribe, you can join in on those type of things. You'll hear stuff that we can't put down on paper because we don't have enough sources or people aren't willing to come out and say that they heard it, but we've got the news. We can kind of talk about rumors and some of those type of things that wouldn't be able to be published as a news story. And of course, we have our message boards. That's where you get all of the information that's not fit to print. It's there, and you really do know what's going on inside of our program. So for Matt Stevens, the Illini Guys beat reporter, for Kedrick Prince, the director of recruiting, this is Illini Guy Mike Kegley thanking you for listening to this. And for Coach Madden, wherever you're at now, I figure you're going to be looking down, trying to figure out and sort out what's going to happen in the playoffs. And we will miss having you around to talk about it. Thanks, everyone.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.